WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are in Las Vegas. I am still in Las Vegas. I'm heading back to Baltimore. I'll be back in time to get the Costas on Friday, right around 2 o'clock. Johnny O, Baltimore County Executive, and other guests. If you missed our first Maryland Crab Cake Tour stop, it was in Highland Town at the Chaucer. Brian Eater, some friends, Zeke Cohen, Heidi Daniel. We had a great event there on Friday. Looking forward to seeing more folks. And it will soon be brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. So we'll be telling you more about that, as well as all of our WNST sponsors. Wise Conversations, trying to find some wisdom here this week. Luke Jones joins us now from back at the homestead, as I am here in Las Vegas. Luke, you know, Lamar, much will be made of that, and his play and the fumbles that ticked him off, as they always do. Not to mention the drop to Andrews and where they are with the offense and how badly Villanueva was outplayed, and Tyree Phillips with the injury, and who's gonna catch the ball. But then there's the defense, right? And I guess the preseason, these meaningless games, if there's anything that it's led us to believe, is that the defense is deep. It's 15, 16 deep. And then you start taking guys out of the defense all of a sudden, right? You take Marcus Peters out and you wonder what happens there, right? And how you absorb that and how you'll get through that part of it. And then you see Tavon Young with some penalties. I tell you, the defense was supposed to be the strength after watching it and watching Derek Carr sort of feast in the second half and fatigue and guys just getting beat. Marlon Humphrey having a ball go over his head to lose the game and then not showing up at a press conference afterward to answer questions about that. I look at the defense and say the leadership part of this, if they're going to win, it's going to be because of the defense. And that won't change on how I feel. The defense needs to be stout. And to your point, the offense puts 27 up on the road on Monday Night Football, and you have a five-hour flight home and you've lost. That's tough to stomach, and I know it's tough for Wink too.
Yeah, there's no question. And I mean, it's not as though the defense has to do it all. But yeah, if you're more of a run-first offense, that usually is not going to jive with a defense that can't stop anyone. And I mean, we talked about it. As much as you can point to some of the deficiencies of the offensive side of the ball and the turnovers and the poor play on the offensive line and Lamar Jackson, you know, struggling in the third quarter, they scored 27 points. And the defense, you know, they played really well until late in the second quarter. And from that point on, they didn't play well. I mean, they played lousy football from that point on. And, you know, that's just something that you're not expecting, even with Marcus Peters, losing him. And we knew that was going to
happen. Look, I was in the post-game elevator with Jameson Hensley going down, and I saw your tweet. It was like 372 yards in a second. I mean, it was just untenable. I mean, you don't win football games like that when you play like that on the road. You don't.
Yeah, I mean, it was 327 yards after halftime. So that's counting overtime as well. So not but, yeah, right. Right. No, no. I'm just
too
clarifying
many.
There. 23 points after halftime. I mean, you're just not going to beat anyone. It was very elements of what we saw, even though they're stylistically not the same, reminded me a lot of that Tennessee game last year in Baltimore where, you know, Ravens had leads. You know, it's looking like they're in control. And then the defense, you know, can't tackle. You know, it wasn't Derrick Henry running wild. You know, certainly the Raiders weren't doing that, but you know, we saw some of these short passes underneath. You know, we saw the sideline play with Renfro where they missed two tackles and he ends up picking up big yardage. I mean, just a lot of un-Ravens like plays being made out there defensively. And you said it, and we've talked about it in our previous discussion, even leading up to the game, how much I felt like they were going to have to lean on their defense maybe a little bit more early in the season because of everything they've dealt with offensively, losing your running backs and your offensive line, not having a whole lot of time as a complete unit to practice together in the summer, and you know, the wide receivers and trying to revamp and become more efficient as a passing game. And you know, so all of that, you point to the defense and yeah, I know they lost LJ Ford. He's a backup at this point. I mean, and that's not to say he wasn't going to play, but let's just be clear. I mean, we aren't talking about losing Ray Lewis there. Losing Marcus Peters. Yeah, no question. It hurts. At the same time, this isn't a group of Raiders wide receivers that, you know, this isn't, you know, Chris Carter and Randy Moss on the outside here. So just to see them as a whole play so poorly in the second half, it's really disheartening because of who's coming to town next. And because of even though the names have changed, we're still seeing a pass rush that didn't get home, whether they were doing their cover zero blitzing or some of the A-gap blitzes, which, Patrick Queen had a really nice one at one point, really sold it well that he wasn't blitzing and then comes around the guard untouched and gets a sack. So, they had some of that, but not much. And they really allowed Derek Carr, who, you made the joke, with JT the Brick talking about benching Derek Carr early in the game. And he looked bad early on. He really did. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The Ravens defensively did a nice job early in this game.
Well, then the Mariota play was like right out of the Lamar playbook. Right?
I don't even know
if they realized he was on the field at that point, right? That was a Cordell Stewart. That was a Taysom Hill. I mean, there was some chicanery going on there, and it worked to perfection, right? You got to defense that play.
It did, but that was pretty inconsequential in the big picture. I mean, what? Jacobs had a 15-yard touchdown run. That they didn't run the ball at all, other than those two plays. But passing the ball, they couldn't get home. And after a while, Waller started to shake free a little more. They weren't hitting him at the line as they did successfully early in the game. And then finally, Bryan Edwards comes out of nowhere to be so huge for them late in the game, just kind of crazy. And it's just very concerning, very disheartening to see that. When you talk about a team that jumped out to a 14-0 lead, and how many times, Nestor, have we seen over these last 3 years at the Lamar Jackson era where they jump out to a lead like that? And how many times we flat out said it's over, right? I mean, ball game, you're going to just run for 250 yards and they're going to be too pass happy because they have to, because they're behind, talking about the opponent, and that's when the turnovers come, right? And that's when they finally start getting some of those sacks, and that just didn't happen. And they got tired. They started missing more tackles and just too leaky on the back end of the defense as time went on. So, just really concerning to see that. We've seen that
they miss Marcus Peters, right? I mean, like when you wonder what the two lockdown, what that looks like and how that changes where offensive coordinators can put people. And Humphrey ran around with Waller for a while. Westry ran around with Waller for a while. And to your point, and then it just felt like Waller was better than them. Waller's really good. And you talk about him and you talk about the Raven roots and Ngakoue and these guys that have been through the program a little bit. Waller impressed me. And to your point, if you're impressed by him, wait till Sunday night. Travis Kelce comes to town, right?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, just remarkable. He's targeted 19 times. A tight end being targeted 19 times. Even back in the day when Todd Heap was the only receiver the Ravens had of any value whatsoever. Not sure he was ever targeted anywhere close to 19 times in a game.
And by the way, all 19 times he was targeted, he was open 16 of the 19 times, right? Literally. And running with pasture in many cases. Out of those 19 times, there were very, very few times where he didn't have some kind of separation that he was truly open, which is the weirdest part, because like, come on, man, to put a body on him. You don't have an answer for a tight end?
Well, they had the answers early on. I disagree. They covered him really well early in the game. His first seven targets, he had one catch. They were doubling him. You saw sometimes they had guys dropping underneath in the coverage. I mean, Chuck Clark had the pass breakup on the one. So
he had a drop too, and Carr was behind him a couple of times too.
Right. I mean, so it wasn't as though he was wide open on 16 of those, but your point is well taken. Eventually a guy
was
like
not
that
well covered
as the game went on. No question. Like I said, you look at the Raiders. I mean, they didn't score until what? They scored their first touchdown to make it 14-7 with 4:14 left in the second quarter. I mean, from that point on, they had moved the ball a little bit here and there, but the defense was playing Ravens-like defense, and you got a two-touchdown lead, and you're thinking, wow, you get the ball to start the second half. I mean, this was it was a big, big opportunity, especially with the fourth down that they didn't convert. But they just had an opportunity where you thought they were going to seize control, and that didn't happen. And instead, the Raiders scored 10 points late in the first half. It's 14-10. And, Justin Tucker kicks a field goal, but at that point in time, it was a game, and it's a one-score game the rest of the way. And even though the Ravens had stayed ahead that whole time and the Raiders didn't lead until they won the game, It's, you know, it had that very unsettling feeling that, you know, you just didn't have a whole lot of confidence in the defense, especially you get into the fourth quarter where, I mean, they just, the Raiders weren't amazing on third down, but they converted enough of them on third down. And, you know, some of those drives, it wasn't even getting to third down. You know, they were just moving the ball. And like I said, whether it was tackling, whether it was leaky coverage downfield, you know, they weren't making stops. And you get to that point on top of your offense being choppy and having the issues that they had, despite the fact that they scored 27 points, so, you know, it's going to add up to a loss. So, you know, the solution, and let's be clear, when we're talking about the missing Marcus Peters, this isn't to say Anthony Averett stinks or Anthony Averett can't do that job. It's what we said. It's what how that impacts your entire ability to call a game. I talked about that a lot. You know, the day you and I were doing the kind of that emergency radio, when you lose Marcus Peters, you look at his lockdown ability, his ability to take away the ball. Same with Marlon Humphrey.
What kind of gas he's going to have in the fourth quarter on play 51 sure. That is going to feel and look different than a rookie or a younger player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Just that veteran thing you want out there, the last 8 minutes of a game, I think that's real, real different if you're playing – not in your first NFL game, because it's not that for Anthony Averett, but when you're playing those kinds of minutes with, I mean, you talked about Tyus Bowser and what that would look like when that level of commitment, when you go from playing 15, 18 snaps mm-hmm. a game to it's nut cut time, it's fourth quarter, and you're on your 18th play in the quarter at the end of the night out here in 105 degrees and your skin's falling off, right? Like, it is different, and it's different what you think you're going to get from an 8 or a 10 or a $15 million football player than a kid you took in a fifth round or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's different. I mean, he started games for them before. I mean, he started a few games last year, played really well, but it is a little bit, it's a different animal when you're that guy. Now, Marcus Peters isn't walking through that door other than being on crutches until 2022. So you're that guy now. The only other guy there is Chris Westry, who has less experience than you. So they're counting on you. And again, I'm not picking on Averett. It's the cumulative impact there. When you have Marcus Peters, who can lock down in man coverage, you have Marlon Humphrey, who can lock down in man coverage, both of them with an extraordinary ability to take away the football. Peters from an interception standpoint, Humphrey with that ability to force fumbles. You know, we saw him ripping at it a few times on Monday night. Didn't happen.
I saw Patrick Queen ripping around at it too. They're all, sure, you know, sure. That's what they're doing now.
Well, and that's part of what they do. They want to force turnovers. I mean, we know what kind of win probability swings those turnovers are. But when you take away one of those two guys, it does make you consider what you can do. Now, we saw, even with that, and I even talked about, does this mean Marlon Humphrey's going to have to stay on the outside more exclusively? Clearly, that wasn't the case Monday night. We saw him move around. We saw them put Westry on the field. They took Tavon Young off the field, as you mentioned, a couple penalties. And, you know, although the one, we never got a good television replay look. The replay they showed was the high, you know, top of the stadium camera where so far away. I'd like to see that again. And try to see that again in the coming days, looking at the replay. But, you know, the point is they tried to do those different things with Humphrey. And I mean, we saw Marlon Humphrey make, you know, plays in this game, but ultimately as a collective defense, they weren't good enough. And to your point, you know, Marlon Humphrey, you know, you see him, you know, coverage just completely busted at the end of the game. And let's face it, they're already in trouble at that point from a field goal standpoint. And their kicker had hit a 55-yarder.
Yeah, but they had staved on. You know, let's talk about that, by the way. Luke Jones joining us here, Baltimore Luke.
I got beat.
And Luke at WNST.net. They staved off a law. I mean, the game was over. They were shaking hands, for crying out loud. I mean, you talk about ridiculous things that happen throughout the course of the game.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the ball pops up in the air. Averett comes down with it and they're alive again. I mean, this was an exciting game. And I guess
sure.
In the backside of it, you feel all the disappointment of the loss, but the emotional part of them having lost the game and won it. I mean, they kicked the winning field goal. Tucker came out, kicked the winning field goal. The game was won. Tick tock, as I tweeted. And then the game swung three more times before it was all over. This is a really tough emotional thing. And I don't know who this team is. I know they have a quarterback that pounds the ground and does all of that, and I don't know how that affects them from a leadership standpoint. I don't know what Patrick Queen has going on, or Marlon Humphrey, any of these guys. They haven't won big games. But I tell you what, coming off of this kind of game in that way, on short rest, to come back onto national TV again, and Chris Collinsworth's coming off the bus, and Al Michaels to bury him in the purple fireworks. By the way, the World Cup contingent's in town this week, dude. The FIFA people are coming to the game on Sunday night. So there's a whole, like, thing going on. And I'll say one thing, and I'll stick behind this all week, as I have Chiefs guest on in the short week. Dude, they're not the better football team on Sunday night. If they win on Sunday night, I'm going to be really shocked, honestly. Like, based on where they are, where it's trending, what that team represents, there's a lot going on here emotionally from a game they had won, lost, maybe lost again, staved off, and then the ball goes over the head of your cornerback. I mean, it's an unacceptable way to lose the game to me. Like, make them come out, kick the field goal, win the game, or sack the quarterback, or strip the ball, or do whatever you do, but can't lose like that and get on the plane. To me, you can't lose like that.
That's fair. That's fair. And I mean, they really didn't even stave anything off. The Raiders self-destructed there. I mean, are we really going to get the...
Unbelievable.
I mean, let's face it. The ball's at the one-yard line. They get stuffed on a quarterback sneak. Leatherwood commits the false start. And then you're talking about, what, on third and goal? I mean, the ball goes through Willie Snead's
hands. 3 points they gave him on the first drive, right? I mean, they had an automatic field goal, and they put themselves, they punted. And that's 3 points that they never got back, but they didn't need it in the end. They won anyway.
Sure. But that's where I do think, when you're talking about it, I mean, I tweeted out that it was the ball game. He throws it to Bryan Edwards, and we think it's a touchdown, and we had the review, and guys are leaving the field and shaking hands. It was very odd. It was a totally different circumstance, but it reminded me of that Ravens Browns game from years ago. What Phil Dawson? I think Phil Dawson was kicking at the time. But the ball hit the stanchion. They said it was no good, and it was, and tied the game. And guys come back out, and they had to play the game that rest of the game then. But just the emotional, just how crazy that was. And somehow you get the ball back, right? I mean, the ball goes off Willie Snead's hands. Anthony Averett picks it off. And then the offense does nothing with it. I mean, Mark Andrews drops a ball, and then Lamar Jackson sacked. It's fumble. And at that point, I mean, they have the ball at the 26-yard line.
That pressing offense that we've talked about, where they felt like they had to throw the ball and they had to make something happen and get down the field instead of just, let's run the ball. And I agree with you. The running wasn't going so great. But I don't love them thinking that they're going to have 11 play drives for touchdowns where they throw the ball 7 or 8 times. I don't think that's who they are.
Are they ever going to win then? They're going to have to do that at some point. I mean, you and I have, and we fight about this sometimes, and that's fine.
I just don't know at what point that's what they should go do, right? I don't know how many points you have to be down to say, I'm going to get in the huddle and call a pass instead of a run on purpose with the scheme in mind that we're going to matriculate the ball down the field by protecting our quarterback, getting the time necessary, having him identify targets and throw them. And as much as we've talked about these tackles and the pocket collapsing and the running backs barely knowing each other's names, let alone blocking responsibilities on the quarterback, right? I just think running's a better idea for them. And I'm not trying to be a jerk on the back end of them losing, but when they lose running, I'd feel better about it than flopping around trying to show urgency in a passing game in overtime where it didn't feel like it necessarily fit to me, especially when the defense is beaten down on them. You know what I mean? I haven't seen Lamar excel in that environment. 70,000 people, 3rd and 14, making throws, playing the John Elway role. That's not the role he plays. Is he cuts your throat by breaking your ankles and running for 38 yards when everything spreads out and everybody's tired on the field except him.
Yeah. I mean, there's definite truth in what you're saying. And
I think that's the best chance to steal the other team's soul is to run.
Understood. Understood. At the same time, you also see Lamar threw a 49-yard dart to Sammy Watkins to set up the go-ahead touchdown with, what, a little over 6 minutes ago. So, I mean, I think there's a middle ground here. You know, I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out to be. At the same time, yeah, I would have certainly run the ball more than they did. But at the same time, how much do you trust these running backs? You know, we talked about it a lot with the mesh point exchange. Even Tyson Williams, and yeah, he's been with this team. How often do you think he's actually worked with Lamar Jackson? Now, not talking the last 2 weeks, because that's changed, right? I mean, of course, from the time Dobbins and then Gus Edwards goes down, yeah, I mean, he's getting all the work with Lamar Jackson. But prior to that, talking last year, him being on the practice squad, talking about late July and early August, talking about OTAs. Now, all the backs get opportunities, so I'm not going to say that these guys didn't have any familiarity. Let's be clear about that, because I'd be making excuses then. But he hasn't been the main guy, and he's only become the main guy here by default over the last couple of weeks. And yeah, they do like him, and yeah, he did some nice things. I mean, look at his final numbers. He should have gotten the ball more, and that's something I was really mystified about for a good portion of the second half. And you know, didn't like his blitz pickup on the last fumble, and certainly that might be a reason he hasn't been not on the field quite as much. But he did some nice things running the ball, but there's just so much to unpack here as far as what they're trying to do. And you just said it. I mean, we know what their identity is, and I'm guessing we're going to see them get back to the run. And I think they're going to do that because that's what they do best. At the same time, the overall point that you made and that I'm kind of disagreeing with in a big picture sense is they've got to learn how to do that, throwing the ball, or we're just going to have the same.
I didn't feel like it was going to be Monday night against.
Sure, that's fair.
Like on short. I felt all weekend, and I had all these conversations once the injuries happened. Not just Gus, but you know, like once the whole thing happened, and they're signing running backs, where I'm trying to figure out how to spell Latavius, right? That right. It would be this desperate, ugly-looking thing that they could escape by running Lamar more than they wanted to run Lamar, and in the end. You just said to me, you'll argue the other point, dude, but then you're like, I'm mystified why they didn't give the ball more to Tyson. But right. I mean, because they lost. And when they lose trying to pass and fail, the Cleveland game
when their defense loses.
Fair enough.
Again,
they kicked the game winning field goal with 30 seconds.
And we did the same thing. You know, we did the same thing with Joe Flacco years ago. You know, when you'd look at, then you'd say, oh wow, the defense allowed scores on three of the last four drives. You know, as much as it is funny that we default to that because we're just so used to great defense in this town that sometimes I think we almost, and I think most people saw, and I'm not saying anyone's given them a pass whatsoever, but you know, there's such a tendency in any NFL city to just pound away on the quarterback or pound away on the passing, you know, whatever. They scored 27 points again. I mean, choppy, ugly at times, inconsistent. Yeah, they made mistakes, but they scored 27 points and they moved the ball over the course of the full game pretty well. But to your point, crunch time. Yeah, you look at when they get the ball back, they're at the 20-yard line. I tweeted out at that time being facetious that, all right, Lamar Jackson's going to take it 80 yards for a touchdown, thinking something wild was going to happen and that's how this game was going to end. But yeah, they pass. They pass again. You know, to Sammy Watkins, move the chains. Latavius Murray carries for 3 yards. And then, you know, the pass to Andrews, which, hey, passes to Mark Andrews are supposed to be a high percentage play. He dropped the ball. And then we saw what happened on 3rd and 7, and that's the ball game basically there. Although you make a fair point in saying you can't just, you know, Marlon Humphrey can't just let Zay Jones go get away and score an uncontested touchdown, at least force them to kick the field goal. And we saw what happened. I mean, their kicker didn't get out to the field and they had to take a delay of game. So even then, another chance there where, you know, it's 2nd and long and you're in a position where you can at least force a 40 something yard, just under 50-yard field goal, and it's hardly fait accompli at that point. But
gave me a chance to give Gruden a kick in the balls too. It was like, is he coaching Monday Night Football or is he broadcasting it? I mean, how do you give up 5 yards there and then run your quarterback out? I mean, there was a lot of goofy stuff.
We honestly haven't done it, as there's so much frustration about the loss, and I understand that, and we've mentioned it in passing. But what a bizarre, really fun as a football fan kind of game, as far as just weird stuff happening. I mean, you just said it. I mean, they trot their kicker out there, which I thought was a little strange. You know, they're at the 26-yard line. If you have
second
Justin
down,
if you have Justin Tucker, then fine. You know, all right, I'll sign off at a 44-yard field goal by Justin Tucker because he's done it so often. But you know, their kicker, you know, hey, Daniel Carlson hit a 55-yarder. Hats off to him. But you know, in that case, I'm trying to get a little more yardage. I'm not doing anything dumb. But I'm trying to get a little more yardage. But then they take the delay of game, and to your point, they send Carr back out there, and yeah, it would have been a 49-yarder. You should be sending your offense back out there. But Marlon Humphrey loses Zay Jones entirely. It's a touchdown. It's over. So weird. But I mean, a very memorable game. That's why I joke that ESPN's hoping for more Ravens Monday night games. And by the way, they'll be on Monday Night Football in about a month with Indianapolis coming to town. So. But it's definitely, I mean, there's so much you can point to in this game about just that wasn't good enough and things that you're concerned about. And the worst possible team coming to town then when you're talking about that with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'll say it again, don't want to overreact in the sense, I still think this is a darn good football team when it's all said and done. But you fall to 0-2, and then you're talking about two back-to-back road games and – all right, the Detroit Lions, I don't think they're very good, but hey, ask the San Francisco 49ers if you know, they can make things interesting if you're not careful. And you know, Denver, a very talented roster. You know, I think quarterback's been the missing piece for them, but they have a lot of other good players. So you know, if you're 0-2 and then you're talking about back-to-back road games, boy, you're in a position where that season gets away from you really quickly if you don't change things fast. So but you mentioned it and I didn't really address it, but you're right. If you're the Ravens, you know, they're not thinking about it in these terms, but if you're evaluating this, there's a better football team coming to town on Sunday night and a team that, you know, they played really close 3 years ago, not quite as close 2 years ago. And then they came to Baltimore in week three last year and, you know, kicked their butts. You know, I mean, they kicked their butts. It was ugly. It was one of those games that wasn't as close as the final score indicated. So it really is a case of they've got to figure some things out here quickly, or they need to hope that Patrick Mahomes wakes up on the wrong side of the bed, because he does that sometimes, but hasn't happened against the Ravens. And we've seen how that movie has played out 3 years in a row.
I am in Las Vegas. I'll be getting home. We'll be at Costas on Friday for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. All of it brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. These Wise Conversations. And man, I need some Wise ice cream after all this and get back home to some home cooking here this weekend. Kansas City Chiefs coming into town, and a lot of things happening, but nothing more important than kicking the season off the right way now that we've gotten it going after 8 months down, especially the way the Orioles have played. Luke even checked in on the Orioles a little bit over the weekend. We're going to continue on. Luke and I are going to continue our conversations. Big thanks to Bruce Posner for getting out of bed early in the morning and doing it, as well as Dennis Colatsis, who will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5. We're now into football season. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills. All that brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, more from Las Vegas in the aftermath of an ugly but interesting 33-27 loss at the hands of the Las Vegas Raiders. Still doesn't roll off the tongue. I am Nestor. He's Luke. We're back for more right after this on WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking Baltimore positive.